Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right. This is the Haney Biz Project. I'm Mark Haney, and as you can tell, I have lost my voice. I am battling through it, but together with Marcus Haney, here we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in Sacramento. Marcus, how you doing today?
I am fired up, and if you need me to carry you at all, you just let me know.
You know what? I am probably going to need to carry. You're going to need to carry us. I can't even get the words out of my mouth. You know what? I was thinking about this, Marcus. You and I have been on doing this show for almost 2.5 years. This is the first time that I have ever come down with a cold or whatever the heck it is.
I think it's the first time in my life ever seeing you below the weather a little bit.
School other than in kindergarten, unless I was out at the lake with friends, but never because of being sick. And I've never missed a day at work, and I am battling through it today. And I've asked our guests that are coming on to keep at least a 3-foot distance from me.
There you go.
As we get through their stories, it's going to be a great show. You know, we asked the question in our newsletter, Marcus, The Revolution, about who will tell your story. I mean, you ever think about like what your legacy is going to be, Marcus, and who will tell your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it often, and you know, that really helps shape the way that I teach my son how to do things and how to be a man a little bit, because I think that he's the next one in line for our family. He's a Haney boy, and you know, I think that he is going to be able to tell the story of what we're doing here and what we're doing to help Sacramento grow in the entrepreneurial community.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times, especially as young people, like when I was your age, I don't know if I was as worried about legacy or the long-term story. I was trying to put food on the table for my family today. I was worried about my lifestyle, buying a couple of toys, and continuing to build the American dream, if you will.
Yeah, what kind of toys were you looking at?
You name it. I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to have a car that ran correctly. I wanted the basics, but you know, as you begin to achieve some of that, and I think especially as you get a little bit older, you begin to think a little bit more deeply about what the story looks like at the end of the day, and who's going to tell that story. And you know, our family, you know, we have one of those family businesses, if you will, where our family is super close. We've got a number of businesses. And I think the family, in our case, is something that helps glue us together in terms of business. But that's also who I would expect is going to tell my story.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it starts back at the top from, you know, my grandparents, mom and dad's parents, of keeping us as one congruent unit. And we got cousins here in the building. We got uncles in the building. We got family, friends, long-term, relationships that are all transpiring right here in front of us. And I couldn't be happier to be a part of it.
Basically family here at Haney Biz. And, you know, today on the show, we're going to be talking about that. You know, we recently bought that big piece of land, the 40 acres. We're going to do the family compound. So we're all about family here at Haney Biz. But you know what? We're going to be sharing more than that today. We're going to be talking about the opioid epidemic later in the show. You know, my next door neighbor, Mr. Tom Candras, he started a venture that's going to address that cause, that big issue in our lives.
Yeah, such a great thing for him to put his time and effort into, you know?
You bet. He'll be coming up a little bit later on the show, and then we are also going to be talking to the tax man, Mr. Jason Cardinay. Right, we know that tax reform is upon us. It's at that final stages. We're going to be figuring out what does that mean for the average American? What does that mean for an entrepreneur? Well, you know, what's that going to do from a macroeconomic standpoint.
The Californians too, right? I think we got a little bit different than most of the rest of America.
There's no question that in California, we are very aware of taxes here. So we'll talk about that a little bit with Jason Cardinay. But coming up after the break, you know what? We have a very special treat. We're going to be talking to Mr. Ken Monroe. He's the president of Holt of California, big, humongous Caterpillar dealer right here in Sacramento. He's also the chairman of the California Family Business Association. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, brought to you courtesy of Five Star Bank. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Now, back to the Haney Biz Project with host Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, courtesy of Hub International. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Ken Monroe. He's the president of Holt of California. Guess how you doing today?
Great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming down. Why don't you tell us about the Holt of California story?
So for those of you who are not aware of this, actually the Caterpillar tractor was invented in Stockton,
in California. So not too far from here, by a guy by the name of Benjamin Holt. So Holt merged with another company in 1925, became Caterpillar Inc. Our namesakes were grandnephews of Benjamin Holt.
Okay.
Started the dealership, ran it for a while. Then we merged with a dealership that was up here in Sacramento area about 18, 19 years ago.
Okay.
And that dealership started in 1931 in Marysville. And so now it's three families that have Holt of California.
So these three families have merged together and they have Holt of California. Give us an overview of what the organization looks like today.
Well, we're about 720 employees. We cover 16 counties for the Caterpillar line and all of Northern California for the forklift line. We're divided into five different divisions. So we've got an earth-moving division that handles the Cat Inc. equipment. We've got an engine division that does generator sets and engines. A forklift group that does forklifts, material handling type equipment. And an ag group called Holt Ag Solutions that focuses on the ag world. And then a rental store called the Cat Rental Store. And they'll rent anything anybody wants to rent.
So thinking about this business, the three companies, three families, how did you guys get together to sort of combine forces with the three families?
Well, the foresight of our previous chairman of both of those institutions, they looked at, down the road, looked at, as Caterpillar dealers, we needed to be bigger. And it was either get gobbled up by somebody else without much of our choice, or get together and say, hey, together we're going to be a viable organization for a long ways to come, but we got to have some size. So those two started talking, and then we spent probably a year putting together a company, and went to Caterpillar and said, we want to merge the two companies and be Holt of California now. And they said that sounds good to them. So that's how it got started.
And having the Caterpillar line of products, right, that that franchise, if you will, that's very, I guess that's rare territory, right? There's only so many Caterpillar franchises that go around.
There's about 170 in the world. In the U.S., there's roughly about 45. And all of the ones in the U.S. are family-owned. And they're all at least third generation, if up to five generations.
Wow. Well, I want to talk about that a little bit. We're talking about, you know, who will tell our story, right? What will our legacy be? And you see so often that family businesses, they'll sort of peter out from one generation to the next. And there's a lot of reasons why. But somehow, the Caterpillar family of companies have found a way to bypass some of those obstacles, I suppose. You know, why do family businesses seem to fall apart a little bit from one generation to the next?
How much time we got today? That's all the reasons why they fall apart sometimes are lack of focus, lack of somebody paying attention to the kids or the grandkids. A lot of times it's the kids or the grandkids who live off of what dad or grandpa did really well at, and they only see the benefits of it without the work that goes into it.
Okay.
So it's staying focused on what it's about, why we're here, what it takes to be accomplished, to move the thing on to the next generation. Takes a fair amount of work to talk about this.
So, yeah, at what age do you start, in your experience, at what age were you starting to become exposed to the business? And then maybe what kind of things did your parents kind of teach you that would prepare you for this CEO type of responsibility?
I don't know that they were thinking about preparing me for CEO responsibility. The first thing you have to do is choose your parents well to get to this opportunity. So I did that pretty good.
Good job.
But I didn't have the opportunity. My dad was not an owner when I was growing up.
Okay.
He worked for the company. He's been there since 62. He's actually still there today.
Wow.
At 85. He had a chance to buy into the business with the Holt son-in-law. And after that, they were looking at succession continuity planning. And I was working for a bank down in Los Angeles, and we had some conversations, and that's how I ended up in the dealership.
Okay. So you got recruited to come in and help out, you know, your dad's business. He wasn't the main owner at the time. But then what allowed you to become a CEO? I mean, what kinds of skills? Obviously, you had the banking background, but what happened in your ascent to become the CEO?
Well, it is a family business, so being part of the family helped.
Okay.
When we merged the companies together, one of the things that Caterpillar wants from their dealers is one person in charge. So one of our decisions was, when we go to them and say, we're going to be Holt of California, who are we going to ask to run the business? And it was one of the things that, again, you put the business ahead of everybody else. The Beatty family, which owned the dealership called Tenco up here in the Sacramento area, actually said, we think Ken ought to be the guy we put in front of Caterpillar to say, is he going to be acceptable to be the CEO? For an ongoing basis. So really early on, we put this company together, people recognized the good of the company was more than just each individual's responsibilities or what they wanted out of the whole thing. So that's how it came about.
Why do you think Caterpillar wants one person to be in charge?
They don't want to deal with the board of directors. They want to sit down and, in their words, we want to be eye to eye with somebody who's going to make the decision. So sometimes what they want you to do is maybe not what a board would want you to do. So we remain pretty loyal to that brand and think that's our, you know, our kind of our gateway to everything else we do.
And you had a financial background or have a financial background. How important is that in running a company of your size?
Well, it certainly helps. You got to have some idea of what's going on. Some of that education is learned on the job. It's one of those you think you know a lot until you get into it, and then you get the real education the hard way.
Well, I have to imagine keeping three families together with multiple owners of the family, but one person in charge, you have to have skill beyond just financial. There's got to be a lot of moving parts and a lot of personalities to sort of keep happy.
I wouldn't put it as a, it's one you just have to put some effort into it. One of my very early lessons was I thought my job was to grow market share, be financially successful, take care of our customers, keep our employees happy.
Makes sense.
I gave no thought to shareholders. It pretty quickly after about a year and a half, I realized, oh, I got these other stakeholders in this I got to pay attention to, and put far more effort into that than I ever thought I'd have to. Again, one of those educations about just keeping them informed. What's going on? Where are we headed? What are we doing? How's it working? Those types of things.
And with the business of your size, and you have to think about the amount of responsibility that you have to your teammates, to these other shareholders, and also thinking about, you know, you and how long you're going to carry the reins as CEO. Are you beginning to plan for your successor at this stage of the game?
Yes. It's, and again, I've told people I'm really good at giving advice about these things, but when it comes to taking my own advice or doing it myself, it's a little bit of a struggle. But out of the Beatty family, a gentleman by the name of Ryan Beatty is part of my continuity, and my daughter, Kelsey, came into the business about 3 years ago. So okay. Those two are the two we're looking at will be my successors in some way.
Okay, and now is there some kind of, contract that gets done in a family like that or in these groups of families that says, here's the process or the governance around how one generation will pass the torch to that next generation?
You know, I wish we could just go buy that off the shelf and say, here's the plan. We did a plan like that. A couple of years after we merged the company, we did, with the guidance of a family business counselor, sat down and said, what do we want to be? We want to be a family business, and our goal is to perpetuate ourselves for the next 100 years, if we can possibly pull it off. And as part of that, we talked about what was the role of kids coming up in high school at the time. Most all these kids were in high school. And if you wanted to work here, what did you need to do? And if you wanted to work here and just have a job, fine, but you're going to get paid the same as anybody else, and that's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. If you want to go up in management, you're going to have to go to college, you're going to have to go work someplace else for a while, prove yourself, and then come into the business, and then we'll talk about where it might go from there.
I like it.
So we've done some guidelines like that. I know other family businesses have been much more regimented about that, and some have nothing at all, and they've all seemed to succeed. So
are there family businesses that you look up to and say, you know what, those people did it right?
Well, off the top of my head, there are. I don't know if I could tell you off the top of my head who they are. I joined a group of cat dealers about 25 years ago, started by a woman in Kansas who was trying to figure out how to get on the contract with Caterpillar. And she contacted, there were 10 of us at the time, and the goal was, how do we get on the contract with Caterpillar? Most of those guys have done a really good job, and most of them have been around for 4 and 5 generations. So I look at them as good models of how can we succeed, because they know that world and they know the family business aspect of it.
Well, you brought your experience to the California Family Business Association. You're now the president of the organization,
the chairman.
You took over for, was it Dave Lucchetti? Dave Lucchetti brought me into the group, and I'm a new member, so I appreciate being a part of that. And I think a lot of us, we dream of having the challenges of how you hand off a successful business to that next generation. But tell us about the organization, the family business organization, and what you're doing now in support of family business.
Sure. The Family Business Association was started. Dave really was one of the founding guys with the real idea of what this thing was about. And it was, family businesses are not well represented at the legislative offices. We get thrown in with the Chamber of Commerce. We all have our own associations, but there's uniquenesses to family businesses. Most of us chose to be in California. Most of us are bound in California by property. By us, it's a territory.
Right.
Some who just want to stay here, but oftentimes we got overlooked, or we're kind of lumped into, it's just small businesses. So the idea was, we need to go lobby for ourselves and grow the family businesses. So it is solely formed to be a lobbying group for family businesses.
What kinds of things do you lobby for? Is this around tax or is this around other issues?
Yes.
Tax is the big...
Well, it's everything. So we started, the focus was on California. So in California, it's a lot of defense, actually. It's all the regulatory things that get thrown at us. So it's saying slow down with regulations, or in a lot of cases, it's fighting what they're keep rolling out to us to get thrown into the regulatory arenas, which get put into regulations, which we all have to live up to, which anybody in business knows you're probably not living up to all of them at any given time because there's so much of them. So we're in every one of those categories trying to go nail down. Now, I say that because we play a lot more defense than what I think we all thought we'd be in there being a little bit more, hey, let's go craft this new law that's good for business. What it really gets down to is trying to keep us at that level playing field with everything else coming.
Yeah. So, I mean, in California, we all know that it's predominantly the Democrats are basically making the decisions or controlling a lot of that. So you're I would have to think, going after the moderate Democrats to try to see if you can influence their vote?
We're a nonpartisan group.
Okay.
We go at this thing as what's best for the family businesses, period. So we have a wide spectrum of members in every sense of a party. So yeah, we'll talk to anybody. You know, with this new tax law that's coming out of the feds, they've already, in the state level, already talked about how they're going to tax us to make up for what the feds are going to do. So last year, we started talking to them about, do you really want to do this?
Right.
What the impact's going to be to business and what that's going to go, and particularly family businesses who might pick up and leave the state. And the point we try to make is family businesses, we think, are better for communities. They stick to communities. They are part of the community. They do a lot to give back to communities. And that's a lot more than just a big corporate entity that comes and goes as their business changes.
Well, I mean, who should be involved in the California Family Business Association?
Any family business.
Okay.
We'll take anybody. We are trying to grow. We have a group that has a little pie shop down in the Stockton area, all the way up to some very big family organizations. We're always looking for new members. Would love to have anybody come on board. I'm happy to talk to anybody about it. We've got an executive director who will be happy to talk to anybody about it. Any family business will take you. And let me just add something to that. Most people think, I don't want anything to do with politics in family businesses. Mm-hmm. And I am in the same category.
Me too.
But a few years ago, we realized if we didn't get into this, if we didn't start having a voice, we're just going to get rolled over. So this isn't something where you have to be active. Pay your dues. We've got a lobbyist on board. We've got people who will go do that battle and occasionally call for your help. So we're not asking for your time. And I know a lot of people I've talked to said, well, I just have time for that. Send your money. We'll go do the battle.
We only have a minute left, but just some closing thoughts around maybe the up and coming entrepreneurs who are thinking, I'm going to bring my family members into the business. And it would be cool to do something like what Holt has done. Thoughts on how they might begin to attack that effort.
They need to talk to their kids about what their expectations are. They need to have a lot of open conversation about from their kids, what they expect out of them, what the business is about working and working hard and putting in the hours to make it successful. And you have to talk about that. You can't just assume they're going to know.
Ken Monroe, Holt of California, I want to thank you for joining me on the show today. When we come back, we're going to meet the partner over at Clifton Larson Allen, the tax man, Mr. Jason Cardinay. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Audi Rockland. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Jason Cardinay, partner at Clifton Larson Allen. How you doing, Jason?
Very good, Mark. Thank you for letting me be on this entrepreneurial revolution.
I appreciate you being here. We all need to have financial advice in our life, and you have been that person for me for the last, we've been working together about 20 years or something?
At least.
Yeah, so, you know, we have CPA here at Haney Biz. We have CPAs on staff, but you know what? We don't have the answer, which is occasionally, or if we have something in the realm of tax or audit. You're our man, Jason, and we want to dive into your brain a little bit today, especially as we think about tax reform, right? That's all I'm hearing about in the news these days. Oh, that's about all the good news I'm hearing, tax reform. Can you give us an update?
Sure. Again, it's been very nice to work with your family, Mark, for all these
years.
Known all your brothers and your family, and it's been a really nice relationship. So glad you're helping with the family business. As far as, where we're at right now with tax reform is it's not final. We have a high degree of confidence that it will happen, and we'll probably hear all the details next week. But they've slowly started to release some of the details of what they're agreeing on. And so some of the high points are, one, the biggest issue is this corporate tax rate for
right.
what we call C corporations. They're dropping that down to 21%. From 35%.
Wow.
A huge reduction. This C corporations are typically your larger corporations, multinational corporations. So they're going to have a lot of extra cash to do something with.
Right. So, yeah, you think about that. What does that do from a competitiveness standpoint for the United States, where we maybe have had higher tax rates than other countries in the past? Now we're dropped down in there where we can be competitive?
Well, as you know, the overall goal of President Trump is to keep business here.
Okay.
Keep it in the States. And so the more you drop rates, the more beneficial it is for corporations to stay here and to want to do business here. So that's the goal. Keeping more cash in the country and
I think we have, 13, 15 businesses around here. I think we have a couple of C-Corps, but the rest are more what we call pass-through type
right.
of entities. What kind of tax breaks can we expect for the average Joe who's got an LLC or an S-Corp or a partnership?
Right. So now you're talking more and more family business, closely held, your S corporations, LLCs, partnerships, sole proprietors. So the benefit that they're getting is they're going to get a 20% deduction on their income.
Okay.
So, for example, if they have a $100,000 business profit, they can take off the $20,000. And then the remaining $80,000 will be subject to normal tax rates.
Okay.
Which the highest tax rate under this new plan is going to be is adjusting to 37%. So the highest individual tax bracket for federal purposes will go to 37%. It was 39.6.
So which is better than to be a C corp where you have this 21% tax rate or an S corp where you've got this calculation?
Right. So this will be the big discussion point. Everybody's going to wonder, well, gee, should we run to be a C corporation? Should we change? And you should not rush to judgment to do that. You should confer with your tax
this
advisor.
This is when you need Clifton
right.
Larson
That's
Allen
right.
to give you the scoop.
So, because you have to remember that that C corporation has a 21% tax rate. That's great. But in order to get the money out of that corporation to you and to put it into your pocket as an owner, there's a dividend tax,
right,
which is about 20%. So you add the two together, you're at 41% tax when you have this C corporation structure. Now, the business owner who is serious about keeping money in the business and growing the business, that's an option. That's an opportunity to have that C corporation structure, because they're not going to pull their money out and pay that dividend tax. They're going to keep it in there, pay less tax, have more cash to grow the business. And so that's a real good example of why we would.
Well, it seems like in the past we've thought, hey, if I have a family business, I'm probably going to want to have a S corp, LLC, a pass through. But some of these we'll call it venture back startups, they'll typically like to come in with more of a C corp because they may have, you know, tons of shareholders and they have these dreams of really hitting it big, maybe even going public. I mean, how do we decide whether we want to have an S corp or a C corp how does the average Joe decide?
Well, you bring up a good point. Most of your venture capital money does like the C corp option because the end game is often to maybe go public. And, of course, to have a public corporation, you have to be a C corporation. And so they're planning for the future, planning for a public offering. So that's when you'd be a C corp. Family business, you can be an S corp, an LLC. You can keep that status for as long as you want. If you see you're going to have investors come in, have a public offering, at that point in time, then you would change. You could change to become a C corporation.
Well, thinking about, okay, so we've been talking about business, but I know we have some listeners that are just like, hey, what's it going to do to my paycheck, right? Mm-hmm. I need to, is the average worker going to end up with, in 2018, a little bit bigger smile on their face because they've got more money in their pocket?
Right. So good point. This does not affect it for the year we're in. This does not affect 2017. 2018, January 1, is when we think this will begin to take effect. From my vantage point, it looks like across the board, everyone's going to benefit.
Everybody gets a little help.
Now, there's a lot of moving pieces. It's possible somebody could not benefit, but by and large, across the board, everyone's going to benefit. And of course, those that pay more taxes are more likely to get the bigger benefit.
Okay.
But rich to poor, poor to rich, everyone is going to have a benefit.
Well, we were talking about family businesses with Ken Monroe and how you pass down businesses sometimes from generation to generation. What about inheritance tax? How should we be thinking about that?
Another good point, as the new law addresses that, currently, you know, if you die, you can have an estate worth $5.6 million. And so long as it's that much or less, there's no estate tax. Okay, so you skip the estate tax. So if it's a husband and wife estate, you can have maybe roughly $11 million and not be taxed. Okay, the new law doubles that.
Oh, okay.
So you're now up to, you know, over $20 million of estate. So if your estate is less than $20 million as husband and wife, you can gift that all to the kids without estate tax.
How do you think that this, well, one more thing I'll ask you about. They talk about repatriation, right? So you have all this money that's sitting overseas in all these foreign countries. Right, American companies have this stockpiles of cash in other countries, and they want to get it back into the United States so that we can deploy it here. How's repatriation, right? How's that going to be affected here as this change is made?
Well, it's looking like the way this tax law is rolling out is that it's going to kind of be forced to happen because they're going to deem that these corporations have repatriated their money.
Okay.
So it's going to be a deemed concept where it's for tax purposes, it's going to be forced to happen at a lower tax rate. But yeah, that's the overall goal, is to get that cash back here. You know, this is all legal. You can have foreign operations, and when you have your foreign operations and you earn money overseas, if you keep it over there, it's not taxed by the United States because it wasn't earned in the United States. It was earned overseas. But there is a lot of money sitting in these corporations overseas, and, you know, Donald Trump wants to see if he can get that back. And again, to have more cash in the United States, more development, U.S. development, more manufacturing, what have you.
So it looks highly likely that something very close to what we're talking about is going to be agreed upon this year and go into effect next year. What kind of macroeconomic consequences do you think that this is going to unleash?
Yeah, that's a real good question. You look at one side, the negative side is, wow, this is just going to raise the deficit. It's not going to generate enough government, money to run the government. And of course, the other side is saying, the cash that will go back into corporate and individual and family bank accounts will allow and stimulate more growth.
Right.
And so, which pays more taxes.
Right. We have economic growth, mm-hmm. and we all pay a little bit more mm-hmm. taxes because we're making some more money.
That's right. Exactly. So it's yet to be seen, depends who you ask. And but there's going to be a lot of extra cash, as a result of this.
Well, one of the questions we asked at the beginning of the show is, who will tell your story? Like, what is your legacy going to be? And you have such a strong family, Jason. I admire what you've built, what you and Joan have built. Who's going to tell your story, and what do you think they're going to say?
Well, it caused you to reflect when you asked that, Mark. And, I have five sons. And I think about what they might say about their mom and dad. And so my legacy is in my family and my wife and kids. We have five boys. They're all out of the house. They're all on their own. Four of them are married, all doing great things. And so, it's not so much how much money I'm making, as I start to see my family. It's not so much how well I'm doing. It's about what kind of a impression and example I'm leaving for them. We have six grandchildren now. So as you think about your family, as we're growing up with our kids, we're can be a little short-sighted to think that it's just us. But now that the posterity is growing, you can just see it blossoming, and so leaving a good family legacy is very important.
Without a doubt. And you are definitely doing that, Jason, and you're helping a number of other families along the way, including mine. So I appreciate everything that you do. You have helped our businesses and helped us in many ways throughout the years. I want to thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
And hopefully we get some of that tax relief that we've been talking about.
You bet.
We return, I will be joined by Tom Kandris, Jason Waller, and Victor Assad, three men who have been affected by growing epidemic of addiction, and we will hear their plan to make it a change. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of the Entrepreneurs Organization of Sacramento and law firm Greenberg Traurig. This is the Haney Biz Project.
And now back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by the entrepreneur next door, Mr. Tom Kandris. Tom, you brought along with you today a couple of buddies, your nephew, Jason Waller, and Victor Assad, right? Tell us what you got going, Tom. What do you get yourself into these days?
Hey, well, you know, I've told you before that I'm kind of wandering but not lost, but right now I'm looking to develop business models around my passion, right? And I want to do it with people that I love and care about, and I want it to be impactful. And so there's a great opportunity here to basically solve a problem that is huge in our market and actually in the world, opiate addiction.
Yes. A lot of us know you from Package One and all the entrepreneurial things that you do here in Sacramento. Now, tell us about this new project and why it's so important to you.
Well, I think it's a longer show than what we're talking about here today, but I can tell you that the team here, my nephew, Jason, I think helped save my son's life. So I'm family is kind of suffering from these challenges. And so here's an opportunity for me to give back and kind of change the dynamics for other family.
Jason, kicking it over to you. Talk to us about this opioid epidemic that's here. I guess it's all over the place, but why is it so personal to you? And what are you doing?
It's not even an epidemic anymore, man. It's a massacre. I mean, at the end of the day, 18 of my 24 family members are affected by the disease. It nearly took my life multiple times. You know, and I was living in such a false sense of reality, and I think people, so many people are robbed from the opportunity to live a true, meaningful, powerful, beautiful life, and that's something that I've got to experience because I've been on both ends, and, you know, to actually have true relationships, true connections, and have a sense of purpose, you know, it's changed my life completely. I mean, it's been, like I said, getting to know Tom the way I've known Tom now. I mean, he's family, but also he's become like a very dear friend, and Vic, who's next to me, I mean, he's been through me through the trenches. I mean, it's interesting how we met, even driving by on the freeway to where we're at today, but we have a purpose today, you know, and that's what we're here to fulfill.
Victor, give us your background and what is this purpose?
I am a native Southern California kid who eventually became locked up in the prison of addiction. I have a very large life, great business, family, wife, kids, and I was going down the tubes. And I was suffering from this seemingly hopeless disease, and then eventually I had a spiritual awakening, and I have since aligned myself and been in a path of recovery and tried to share my experiences and strength and hope with others. And hopefully that's what we're going to do on a broader basis and maybe make a cultural shift.
Now, Jason, you were a TV star, and you became exposed to this problem. What's the business look like today that you're building with Tom and Victor? What are you guys trying to do?
Well, I think at the end of the day, look, I went through a very public, you know, battle with addiction, you know, and I was able to utilize that platform to show that change is possible. And I think through this is that one is, look, their treatment is so looked down upon. It's almost like you're guilty by association because there's so much fraud. There's so much stuff that goes into it. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to provide is that treatment does work. It can help people. It does help people. And we're trying to shed light and creating a new standard in the way people perceive treatment is really what it comes down to. There is no standard. The fact that you and I, we can't go open a cancer clinic today, but you can go open a treatment center. I have so much frustration towards that because it is a primary chronic progressive and fatal disease just like cancer. So there needs to be standards and set things around that. And there is no, I mean, as we see, there's no effect that's disrupted the process. All we've seen is the death tolls go up every single year. And it's like, you got to start with the change at the beginning, the point of entry.
The problem is enormous, Tom, but what's the business model that you're creating to address this problem?
Part of the business model is really developing a virtual platform that we can reach a lot of people. There'll be a physical component to it, but I think, as Jason mentioned, there's so many things that are not right with the service industry that we're looking to attack, and we're going to do it the right way. So I think there's some great business models. There's a change in modality and how we attack the problem, a whole vetting system, a whole medical recovery system, and kind of building out that elite team to really bring real change to this industry.
So there are physical locations for the business?
There are physical locations that we'll work with as an affiliate, and then long term there will be some physical locations that will be part of TLC.
So thinking, Victor, what do you imagine the business looking like? Right now you're at the beginning stages. What can we imagine this business is going to look like in the years to come?
Well, our hopes are to be able to bring a new awareness for people younger, a demographic that is younger, educating them and trying to promote a better way of living rather than falling into the vortex of substance or alcohol abuse.
You know, we think about recovery, Jason. I mean, what are the keys in recovering from this these terrible addictions?
Well, I think for me, the biggest, I mean, how I stay sober is through foundation, fellowship, and service. You know, not to sound cliche, but what we're going to implement here through the business model is prevention, education, and solution. We're not going to focus and talk about the problem. We're going to do something about it. Our team, what I've noticed is with the people we've all met with and the connection that we have within people, it's mission over margin incentivized. You know, it's we're passionate about it. We wake up. It's not a job. It's something that we actually get motivated towards, and we know that we're making progress through that.
Tom, thinking about next steps, I've heard you guys talking about a trip out to Washington, D.C. What kind of steps are you taking now at this stage of the game?
Yeah. You're my favorite, bro. I love this guy. I'm sorry.
You're pumped.
But what I want to add one thing is that this is really, as much as it's about the addict and the individual, it's really about the family.
Amen.
And so this is a whole family dynamic. It's changing the dynamics of a dysfunctional family who has an addict in it and the impact on the family. So the education is not just for, the recovery is not just for the addict, but it's also for the entire family. So what we hope to accomplish is that, you know, frankly, we're out here, you know, building out the model, working with our affiliates, trying to influence the direction of where Washington will take this problem and, you know, and basically where we're going to meet the challenge.
Well, I can only imagine, Tom, you and I are such close friends, but I can only imagine what it does to the families that are affected by addiction, and it tears them apart. You're saying this is a family issue, but this is the type of thing that tears families apart, isn't it, Jason?
It really is. I mean, look, at the end of the day, sometimes the loved ones around the addict are actually sicker than the actual addict, and you don't understand that. I mean, I saw my dad and mom, due to enabling and codependency, physically and mentally age 10 years in a matter of one or two because of the stress and the things that they didn't know how to set those boundaries, you know? And I mean, that's what people don't understand is it goes both sides. I mean, it disrupts the whole component, everything that I know within my family. Like I said, having 18 of my 24 family members suffer with the disease. My brother, I mean, when he was actively in this whole thing, I literally had to reach out to outside sources, even though I do this for a living and I'm in this constantly, is because I'm too close to it. I have a bias on the situation and it's very easy to get wrapped up into.
I feel like the addict in recovery also puts the family in a hostage situation.
Correct.
And we're sitting in a room full of people right now, and I'm guessing that each one of us has some sort of connection to someone who is suffering with this disease.
I believe the statistic now is 1 in 4.
1 out of every 4 people.
In the world, 1 in 4 has substance abuse problems.
Is this problem growing or is it staying the same? I mean, it feels like we're so much more aware today of it than we were maybe 10 years ago.
This disease is progressive, but what we're going to try to do is make recovery progressive also.
We're going to make recovery attractive. We're going to make it cool.
Like cool.
We're going to make it a part of, yeah.
And these guys will make it cool.
Well, let's talk about that for a second here. You guys bring a cool factor. Candrus, we know you as the entrepreneur. Jason, you are the movie star. You've done the reality TV stuff. Victor, you've got relationships that go far beyond what most of us might think are normal.
It's true. It's true. I have a very big life right now, and I could not manage within that framework. I had to live a double life. I was using and trying to promote myself as an upstanding citizen, and meanwhile, I was sneaking around and hiding and lying, and it was the worst prison I've ever experienced in my life, the worst. And today, I have a freedom and a happiness that I can hardly iterate to you. right now, but I feel as pumped as you do. I vibe off your...
For Victor, yeah, I think the biggest thing is for Victor and I think we can relate to this, and Victor, correct me if I'm wrong, we both lived and had an overinflated ego with an underestimated sense of self-worth. That's basically how it describes our lifestyles. We were living through our materials or other things that really could just deflect from who we really were.
Yeah. Just closing thoughts, Tom. We only have about a minute left. Closing thoughts about this venture and what the rest of us might be thinking about. How can we help?
Well, I want to add one other comment here is that going through the struggles as a family, the only good night's sleeps we had is when we knew that our son was in lockdown.
Mm.
And so I want to make sure that other families can have good night's sleeps when their sons and daughters and loved ones are out and about and can find that kind of peace.
Amen.
What can your friends do to help a family or a friend when their family is going through such tough times? I mean, we obviously know you and Teresa so well, Tom, and tried to stay by your side. But what can friends do to support? Sometimes we don't know what to do.
Don't be ashamed. Reach out, get help, educate yourself. Give us a call.
I want to thank you guys for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Mario.
Yes. Jason Waller, Tom Kandris, appreciate you calling attention to this horrible epidemic, massacre, if you will. When we come back, we will be talking a little more about entrepreneurship, and hopefully I will get my voice back. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back for Mark's takeaways from today's Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Silver's HR. I'm Mark Haney, and I am back here with Marcus Haney. Marcus, closing thoughts, takeaways from today.
Yeah, it was really interesting from my perspective to hear about the Family Business Association and what they're doing for companies and organizations like ours as we grow and think about our 100-year plan and how to put that into perspective. And Ken Monroe is just an awesome person to be able to be the speaker on that.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned a 100-year plan. We talked about that during the break and thinking about businesses that are looking to carry their story from one generation to the next. A lot of times there's a break in there somewhere. Yeah. And how do you keep that from happening?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I am going to learn the answer upon some discovery here as we move forward. But I think it's all about teamwork, right? I think is if we can be the best teammates to one another, then I think all else falls in line.
Yeah, no question. And, I got to give a little shout out to Jason Cardinay. I mean, if you do transition your business from one generation to the next, and it's got some value, some financial value, you want to make sure that you minimize the taxes. And it sounds like we're working on some, we're making some progress on making that a little bit better. It still seems a little bit awkward to have to be paying tax on something just by handing it over to the next generation.
Yeah, boy, does that sound sweet to me. You know what I mean? It's like, why are they going to get their cake and eat it too?
Yeah, and then just thinking about stories, and every story has a turning point, right? And thinking about the how do you keep this going for the next generation? And I think a lot of times family traditions, whether it be in family business or elsewhere, they're done through stories, right? It might be a story about a grandpa and how he worked himself to the bone, right? 50 years at the same job, focusing on just family and focusing on his work, right? And the story about how maybe he overcame some odds. I just think about every story has a turning point, right? And it usually means there's some hard times along the way. And then it's how we overcome those difficult moments and how we overcome those difficult times. That's the turning point.
Right.
Every good story has a turning point. And I think those are where the lessons come in our families, the lessons of hard work, the lessons of never quit, the lessons that giving more than you take is the way to live your life. And I think in families, more than in any other kind of business, those stories are so much more relevant and so much more possible. And I think that can be one of the strengths if we do it right of a family business.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you think about everything from the Bible on through. It's all storytelling of the great sides of everybody in the larger than life type of personality that some people have, and what they can do to emulate that along the way, I think is super important for, you know, our kids, my grandkids to strive through.
Yeah. So as we think about today's show, we think about our story, you know, who will tell our story. I'll tell you what, if you are an entrepreneur out there and you are having a turning point and overcoming something, you know what? I would like to be the one to tell your story, and to all those family businesses out there who are battling to keep it together and maybe hand it off to that next generation. You know what? A salute to you and all those fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. To the 13 stripes, to the 50 stars, and to the one big American legacy always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.